Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the SAP, the Sex Actually Podcast. We discuss all things dating, relationships, love, communication, comedy, so much to talk about. It is your boy, Dave Neal. I do apologize for last week's episode. I didn't do a 4th of July episode. I know. Look, I've been making so much content on YouTube. I was maxed out. But speaking of YouTube, as you guys know, I've been making a ton of content this last year on Bachelor Nation. That's kind of where everything's been exploding. And there's a guy named Reality Steve. His real name's Steve Carbone, if you haven't heard of him. He is the one of the largest Bachelor Nation recappers. He releases all the spoilers and shares his opinions on the show and this and that. Well, I never thought the guy even heard of my channel, but I actually saw that he made a video with Wit and Rye, another recapper group, and they talked about a lot of his past writings, how they were problematic. They came up in a time where there was a lot of misogyny and sexist writing and other issues that have crept into his life, and there's been sort of a campaign to cancel him and this and that. So after I watched a video that he made with Wit and Rye, he actually reached out to me to be like, hey, thanks for even understanding my point of view, where I'm coming from and this and that. You know, you guys know me. At the very least, we're all about having empathy, you know, just listening to each other, understanding we all kind of come from a place with imprints and ignorance and this and that. And that's all we can do is move forward, try to do better, and this and that. So I did his podcast. We spoke for 90 minutes. It was a very good chat. And then he did my YouTube, which I'm about to play the audio for you. And this was a great conversation. You don't have to really follow Bachelor Nation to understand this conversation. We talked about how he ethically sources his you know, his how he gets his sources and the ethics behind what information he should reveal, you know, because these are essentially, you know, real human beings that are on a dating show. And he's got the platform that can, like, make or break them, as it were. So we talk a ton about the different morals and ethics behind that. And it's a pretty interesting conversation. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Let me know what you think. You guys, if you want extra content, I'm making extra live streams on the Patreon. It's patreon.com/thisapp. patreon.com/THES. I'm sorry. You know what? I changed the URL to it. I'm used to saying that. patreon.com/DaveNeal. Keep it simple. patreon.com/DaveNeal. You know, I'm going to have to reckon with a rebranding of the podcast just because I evolve, you evolve. We change different things we talk about. And I don't know, maybe it'll be me, you know, I still talk about dating and relationships and things like that, but it's so open-ended that I kind of feel like I need to start calling it like the Dave Neal Show or something like that. If you have any ideas for what a rebranding name should be, let me know. I want the podcast to be more synergistic with the YouTube, you know, because it's kind of like one versus the other, but I think we can combine the two. So anyway, folks, enjoy my conversation with Reality Steve, aka Steve, well, properly known as Steve Carbone, aka Reality Steve. Have a good one, folks. See you later. All right, ladies and gentlemen, special guest today on my YouTube channel, we got Steve Carbone, aka Reality Steve. How are you doing, my man?
Dave, I'm doing great. Thanks for finally having me on.
Of course. I want to consider this part two to our conversation because we spoke on your podcast for 90 minutes, which I feel like if we needed to go 10 hours, we probably could have got that done. But I feel like that was a pretty good chat. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it was a lot of, I liked it because we covered so many different topics, even stuff that just based on something that was like an answer that you gave turned into, oh, that reminded me of this. And we hit a lot of different topics within Bachelor Nation and just in general, whether it's the comedy world and whatnot. So it was a really good convo. I loved it. And we got a lot of good response on it too.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did on your end. Cause I was going to say, I told my people, if there's something I didn't ask right, let me know. Cause we're going to talk again. And I didn't get any notes from anybody. So I guess that's a good thing.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I had a few emails and then I had a few responses under the tweet about it saying, you know, so glad you finally had Dave on, really liked the interview and stuff like that. It was just, you know, generic stuff. And but it's always good to get a good response on something like that.
Now in this chat, there might be like 10% of some things that I wanted to just like elaborate on or sort of might sound a little redundant, but I did want to go in a little bit deeper. So you come from a sports journalist world. How do we go from sports journalism to Bachelor spoiler king?
Yeah, there's literally no correlation whatsoever. The only thing I ever wanted to do, starting about end of high school, beginning of college, was I wanted to have my own sports talk radio show. I was a big fan of the Jim Rome show back in the day. And then right when I graduated college, I started working for Jim. And that was all I ever wanted to do was sports. And then just for fun, back in, I guess it would have been early 2002 or 2003, I was just, reality TV was in its early infancy, to say the least. And a television show started premiering during, I think, football season on Fox for a reality show called Joe Millionaire, where they were going to basically try and trick 20 women into thinking a guy was inheriting $300 million when he actually made 25 grand a year. And I was like, and this is the, like I said, this is infancy of reality TV. Like that today, like be like, okay, whatever. Like, but in 2002, that was like a big deal. It was the first time that it was like some sort of trickery when it involving reality television. So I just started writing a recap. I watched it and I was just, I was amazed by it. I'm like, I can't believe these women are falling for this. And I would just write a recap to my friends on an email. And that email kept getting passed around because they thought it was funny. And then people were asking me that I didn't even know, can I be on your Joe Millionaire email list? And then I was like, well, I need to start doing something with this. And then Joe Millionaire ended and people said, are you going to do another show? And I'm like, well, what's the next dating show? It's like dating was easy. We've all done it. It's easy to make fun of in the reality TV world. And they're like, well, the next season that was up in the dating world was The Bachelorette, which was Trista's season. So there had been two bachelors and then Trista was the first bachelorette. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll just do that one. And then ever since then, like literally every episode since Trista's season, I think outside of one or two, I've written an episode recap for. This isn't what I planned. I never expected it in a million years to get as big as it has, but it has. And so I'm just continuing to ride the wave.
Has anyone tried to option your story for a movie before?
No, nobody has. I don't think, outside of like, I think that is pretty interesting how it turned into literally an email to three people. I remember the three people that were on my initial email chain of Joe Millionaire to where it is now. I think that is kind of interesting, but everything else that would fill a 90-minute movie would be not the least bit interesting.
You never know. I mean, The Social Network was like, you know, you got that early Mark Zuckerberg days where, you know, you're like, whoa, this is a thing. I've talked in the past to like Dave Portnoy, who, you know, he was writing a gambling smut rag, you know, for Barstool before it became what it was. And people kind of realized he was the character separate from whatever he was trying to cover. Do you feel like your character is what kind of gave you the popularity versus the show, like a separate perspective?
Yeah, I think it was also, you know, we talked about it on my podcast. It was the writing back then of, it was like a very exaggerated version of myself. And it was very, it was almost like, you know, guy talk while you're watching The Bachelor with your guy friends, even though none of my guy friends watched the show. I watched it literally by myself. Pretty much I've always watched it by myself. And, but it was almost like, well, if guys sat around watching the show, what would they say about things that are happening in the episode? And that's the way I wrote. And I think, you know, because it's been around for 17 years, I don't know if people realize like Reality Steve has been a website since 03. Like, so we're looking at 18 years now. I didn't just come along last week. I've been writing about this show outside of the first two seasons. So 40 of the 42 seasons that I've covered. And, you know, obviously a lot has changed over the years and evolved, but yeah, I think initially it started out with just this guy that was really harsh and bit and making fun of the show back in the early heyday of, wow, it's a really fun, funny perspective with a guy sense of humor, which is a show watched by, for the most part, you know, this is a show for women, not men.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of what makes humor is the surprise element. So like if the Bachelor premise is, oh, finding love, it's easy to find the punchlines being like, that guy's there for the wrong reasons. That dress isn't going to get you love, that, you know, all those different things that back in, cause I come from in the New England sports radio world, enjoying the product that they have, which of course Boston humor is pretty dark and cruel. Mm-hmm. So like, I understand applying sports radio tech, along with like the Howard Stern sort of shock jock world that was like Opie and Anthony, Howard Stern. Those guys were doing wildly insane things. So not to, and again, we talked about this on your podcast, not to excuse behavior, but to sort of speak about the times. It's just a product, you know, we're coming to terms with the Perez Hiltons and the, you know, what, you know, the damage that has been done. But for whatever reason, no one really looks really deep into the Joe Millionaire, the actual people that created the show and how crazy that was. You know, there's the guy's getting blown in the woods or whatever. And I'm like 18 watching it going like, what's going on? That show is wild.
Like, it's funny that you mentioned that because that's literally, if you were to ask anybody right now who did watch Joe Millionaire back then, what's the one scene you remember about Joe Millionaire? It is when that one girl went off into the woods with him and they played a bunch of slurping sounds on the screen.
They literally,
we didn't see a girl blowing a guy, but they insinuated that this girl just took a guy into the woods and gave him a blowjob, which probably didn't even happen. I'm guessing it didn't happen, but that was like the first advent of what is happening on our television. And yeah, that's the one thing that people remember. It's so funny that you brought that up. So I can't tell you one other thing about, I remember how it ended kind of, but if you ask me the details about how everything went down at the end, I wouldn't have all the details right, but that's the one scene.
Yeah, it for sure is a great premise, but it brings out, it almost like manipulates the scale of the ugly side of, you know, what people are attracted to, whether it be security because someone's got wealth or this or that. I mean, it was a real brutal show. No, so how do you go from the Joe Millionaire, you pass it around to a few friends. At what point do you go, oh, this is like my business now. Like I need to clear all my time to make this a priority.
Yeah. So all that started in 02 or 03. And then literally for 6 years, I wrote a recap that was on I created the Reality Steve website, I think early in 03 or maybe 04. And what happened? I just put it on there because I was like sending it out in an email chain. And at the time you couldn't send it out more than 25 people at a time. So I had like 350 people on my email list that I had to send this out to. And I'm like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. So I had to send it out and whatever the 350 divided by 25 is, that many different emails. And I'm like, all right, I need to do a website where I just post it and people just go to it every day. So I did. But then from the time that started until 2009, I just did it in hopes that somebody would see my writing and maybe offer me some freelance work. I never pitched myself. I never sent any of my writings to any outlet. So it was like, I did it. And then after a while, after about 2 or 3 years, I was like, this is what people are expecting out of me. So I might as well just keep doing it. And I was like, yeah, I hope somebody sees it someday. The right person sees it and likes my writing and says, yeah, well, we'd love to have you write for us. And then in 2009, I got my first spoiler. So for 6 years, I just wrote about the show. I knew nothing about the spoilers, the underground world of spoiling. I knew the show was taped in advance, but I never thought to anything about, well, what if I found something out? And then Jason Mesnick's season, which aired in January of 2009, I got my first spoiler. And nobody had any reason to believe me because I've been writing for 6 years and I had never spoiled a thing. But this Jason Mesnick season, as we know, was like literally, you know, the show has gone through phases, but I think Jason Mesnick's season put this show back on the map. They were struggling mightily and almost on the verge of cancellation when they were talking about, when you were in your, Andy Baldwin years and Charlie O'Connell years, they were on the verge of cancellation. Then Jason Mesnick's season happened and they were, you know, on the cover of all the magazines or whatever. And it really rebooted the franchise. And I had the spoiler to that season and I released it probably a couple weeks before the finale. And I said, look, the bottom line is Jason proposes to Melissa at the end. You're going to see that. But they have since broken up. They taped a private after the final rose in front of no audience. And he dumped Melissa and asked Molly to date him. And they're currently dating. And nobody had any reason to believe it. And most people were like, what? No way. How did they tape that? How did they get away with that? How did we not find out? And I'm just like, look, you'll find out. And I was vindicated when the finale aired. And then from that point forward, it's just like people just enjoyed telling me stuff. And then a year later, in January of 2010, was Jake's season. And that's when someone came to me and said, you need to be making money on this. And I didn't know anything about internet and ads and stuff. And someone came to me and said, I can help you out. and they started putting ads on my site in January of 2010. And then in August of 2011, so a year and a half after running ads on my site, I realized, okay, this can be a full-time job. So we're 2 weeks away, or we're a month away from exactly 10 years that Reality Steve has been my full-time job.
So it's kind of like a Shark Tank moment there where they, they're like, all right, let's clean you up. Let's get you out there. And then let's get some profits going.
Yeah. And I had no idea. And it's funny because I still have everything on my computer from the first month I put ads on the site, which was Jake season in January of 2011. What I made on ads back then versus what I make now. And it's just, there was a rise, and then internet advertising in terms of, you know, I only had like one ad or two ads back in January of 11. Now my site is inundated with ads. It's crazy. I have every breakdown of every month since January of 11 of how much I've made on my site. It's really weird. I mean, I never would have expected it. In 2011, I don't think any of us knew where the internet advertising world was going.
Have you caught Jason Tartik's podcast, Trading Secrets? Have you listened to it at all?
I've listened to clips. I've never listened to a full podcast. Which one did I listen to? Well, I watched Shark Tank, so I listened to the one with Kevin O'Leary. Okay. I heard that one, or
which is
parts of it.
Fascinating how, like, saying, you know, he should be making around 750K a year based on his following size doesn't even go close to saying what Caitlin Bristow is making, because I'm sure that's triple. At least I'm sure she's 2 to 3 million, but it's
fascinating. She's definitely in the seven figures.
Now,
for sure.
What's so popular on YouTube is making videos saying how much money I made in this year. And I've considered that, not that I've something to brag about, but have you ever considered just opening the books and saying, this is the back end, this is what's going on?
No. I don't know. Is that really a thing now that people are sharing
time.
How much they make?
Big time. Yeah.
Really? So what is it other than, I mean, there's got to be a part of that that's an ego stroke.
It's,
like, why else would
it's
you
actually,
share that?
It actually, because those videos just do really well. So a lot of people that, like, you know, in the finance videos, they'll say, hey, this is what I made in this month, you know, six figures. And people go, oh my gosh, that's crazy. So I think there is a curiosity about the business side of things, you know, and again, I've my fiance's like, don't you talk about that, you know, you're going to get audited, this and that. I'm like, yeah, you're kind of right. I mean, and for Jason's podcast to be kind of talking about it, you can feel it in their voice how kind of hard it is to even share, because it's like, you know, people don't talk about those things. And I respect that.
Yeah. I would never feel comfortable talking about that. I'm glad that Jason is. I thought I think it was the one podcast, maybe I heard the clip of it, where he broke down what the contestants and the lead makes. I think I remember hearing that one. I thought that was interesting because that's something that's been very taboo. It's never been talked about. I mean, I've for years told people what you make on Paradise and roughly what the lead makes on the show. And Jason basically confirmed it. Right. You know, it's like a daily, you know, I think he had Dean on, and Dean was like, yeah, I was making like $400 a day. And yeah, that's the per diem down there. Unless you're a bigger name, you can negotiate more. And some people come on for a flat fee of like 10 or 15,000 if you're a bigger name. But if you're fresh off the season, like this season of Bachelor in Paradise, and you look at Matt James women who make up a lot of this season, I guarantee those girls are getting $400 or $500 a day per diem. Maybe it's up to $750 now. Maybe in the $500 to $750 range. It's, but yeah, per day. You extrapolate that over 3 weeks, it's maybe what, $8,000? Like, it's not, you're not retiring over going on Bachelor in Paradise.
For sure. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, I've been in SAG for 15 years, and you know, the rate will change, but you get residuals. If the producers make money, you make money. And if you don't, you have someone to call, and like, if someone's smoking on set, you get paid more. Like, all these little assurances. I'm sure The Bachelor, the actual show itself, they're all union, like on the crew, but it does take advantage of the fact that this is non-union talent. And I wonder if the show even picked up steam during the writer's strike, and you know, when all that was going down, when reality TV really took off, when like they were like, all right, we don't need written shows, we'll just do this. Like, no one's listed as a writer on Bachelor, even though they are sculpting their thing and this and that. But yeah, it just becomes fascinating because there is, like, you know, when we talk about Joe Millionaire and then Bachelor, there is the taking advantage of contestants, and then that's kind of like just you know, I feel like most of the demographic that watches regardless of not, and this isn't political at all, are just simple-minded and not understanding, like, their name will forever be associated with what, you know, they might have made $600, but their name's going to be gone if the show decides that they want to splice together a storyline and the producers can go buy another house or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think these people are going down to Paradise for the money. They're going down for what it can constitute post-show, which is tons of followers. Maybe you get an engagement out of it, and then you become a, you know, a power couple, so to speak, in this franchise. So yeah, they're not definitely going to Paradise for the money, but just the fact that you have to give up. I mean, people have asked me this over the years, and it is kind of funny. Like, what kind of people can actually go to their boss? We're talking about Bachelor, Bachelorette, can go to their boss, because you're not allowed to tell your workplace where you're going. You're not allowed to say, I'm going on The Bachelor. I think some people do, but technically you're not allowed to tell your boss, but you basically have to tell them, I could be gone a week. I could be gone 2 months. So just to let you know, that's my situation right now. And that's why, and you know, not to disparage any of these people's jobs, but that's why the jobs of these people on the show are, you know, fitness trainer, bartender, server, you know, those are the kind of jobs that can let you leave for 2 months. You're very disposable.
Yeah.
You're not getting a lot of CFOs that are showing up on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette.
Very true.
And, you know, there have been a few lawyers, which I've always scratched my head at. I don't know how lawyers have ever made it on this show, but they have. And, you know, a law firm has let their person go on the show for, you know, however long they lasted. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like you're looking at a time where I don't think many people can go to their job and say, can you give me possibly two months off?
Right.
Because I just, and it's not work related. Like, hey, and if they do end up telling them, like, hey, yeah, I'm going on a reality dating show. Like, you're disposable if they kind of let you do that.
Now,
I just don't see any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Totally agree. With regards to the spoilers, I know you can't share any of the, you know, obviously sources and things like that.
Yeah.
But once you show that you are like handling your sources well, you must receive a lot more trust from new sources and people like that. Was there a moment where like, things started to really come in and you're like, I'm the spoiler guy now. Like, was there a moment where it was like, whoa. And then how do you vet that? How do you vet all that information?
Yeah, it's taken a lot of ups and downs over the years. I think the biggest thing has just been after that Jason spoiler, I had no idea because the next season was Jillian's season. And I don't think I had a lot for Jillian's season, but the season after Jillian's season was Jake Pavelka's. And I remember the night of the premiere, like as the episode was airing, I got this dump of information sent to me about the final four breakdown of Allie, Gia, Tenley finished second, and he picked Vienna. And I'm like, whoa. And after Jake, who was after Jake? It was Allie. And then I got stuff on Allie's season and so on and so forth. But it just became going into every season, I'm like, am I going to get information? Because it's not like there's one person that was just like, hey, here you go. Just feed you everything every season. Because if that was the case, I would never get anything wrong. It's like, you know, it's like one person that knew everything, I would never get anything wrong. And it's obviously not been the case because I've gotten plenty of things wrong over the years. A lot have been able to correct. But so the vetting process has been interesting because now so many people just send me anything that they know. And it's like, okay, who are you? How do you know this? Do you know it directly or hearing it indirectly from somewhere else? Oh, I heard it from somewhere else. Okay. Well, how does that person know? And then you have to kind of go down the line of where's the originator of this spoiler? And for a while there, I didn't go that far back. I was just running with anything anybody told me because it was a good spoiler. And then I realized I started to get myself in trouble by posting wrong spoilers and posting things that were just flat out wrong about contestants, which obviously is not a good thing. And so now the vetting process is anything I hear, whether someone texts me or whether it's an email or a DM message, I almost run down the checklist. Okay, how do you know this? And then based on that answer, go to the next question and then go to the next question. And that's really all I can do. Like, I clearly don't work for the show. I'm clearly not on set. No spoiler I've ever given has been firsthand information. I can tell you except one, and that was... it was so random, but on Andy's season of The Bachelorette, she had a date, a hometown date with Marcus, and Marcus lived in Dallas. And I had found out where they were filming the day portion of his hometown date before they went and met the family. And I drove down there and I sat there and production was side eyeing me. And they kind of, I think after a while they realized who I was and what I was doing there, but they were in a public place. They couldn't stop me from being there. And then after a while, I was just, I got enough video footage. I took some pictures of Andy sitting with Marcus at a table, just discussing. And then I left. But that's the only thing I've ever gotten firsthand. And it's so irrelevant now, but so everything I get is not firsthand, yet clearly I've gotten a lot of stuff right. So it is possible to not be there or not hear something firsthand and have correct information. So that's all it's come down to is at this point, it's just the vetting process has become a lot tighter, I'd say, in the last 3 to 4 seasons or 3 to 4 years, where it's just like, I've got to be a little more hard on how do you know this and where is this info coming from? And then if that happens to be true, like the times that I have been wrong, I think people have been under the assumption that somebody is planting wrong information with Reality Steve because he'll just run with it. And that couldn't be further from the truth. For me, it's just been, I think the people that tell me stuff honestly believe it to be true. And so I'm just finding out how secure are you in knowing that this is true? And then kind of go from there. Because I mean, I remember the one thing that I did, the best spoiler I ever had was Andy's season. And I got a plane video of Nick Vile literally coming back from the Dominican Republic, flying back home and on the phone to his parents, talking about what happened on the show. And somebody from my past happened to be sitting right behind Nick on the plane and recorded him. And even when I posted that video, and it was clear as day it was Nick Vile, it was clear as day what he was talking about, and it was clear as day that he wasn't picked, and Josh was, I still had people saying, this isn't real. This was planted. Producers gave this to him to run with. I'm like, okay, that's what you want to believe, but I'm telling you, this is a woman from my past that literally just happened to be sitting behind Nick on a flight, overheard him talking about the show. She was familiar with the show and just hit record. And
yeah, you know, I'm kind of, I'm that way with like government conspiracies. I'm like, I don't think the government's necessarily competent enough to commit all of the things that people think they're doing. And it's the same thing with The Bachelor. I don't think they're, you know, that good at what they do. You know, they'll botch, you know, everything that they're going to be that good at kind of, you know, inceptioning this information to people. Now, so I'm seeing you as like the newsroom where they're like, you know, trying to vet their sources and trying to get a second source, you know, and then I see also Adam Schefter, who, you know, as far as NFL goes, he's the main guy who breaks the story. And it's like, what's the difference between the guy who breaks the story and the guy who has it 5 minutes later? Not much, but it's a big deal. It's a big deal because that's kind of like who broke the story. And that's something that you've kind of just, that's your kind of ball. You've ran with it.
Yeah. And it's a good comparison because, you know, those guys are all good. The Jay Glazers and Adam Schefters and Chris Mortensen are all competing against each other for who's breaking the story first. Now, if Adam Schefter, yeah, and this is just coming to my head because of the golf tournament yesterday, but you know, Aaron Rodgers and what the hell's going on with him with the Packers is obviously a big story. Let's just say that Aaron Rodgers ends up demanding a trade. He hasn't said it yet. If Adam Schefter is the first person to report it later on this summer, whenever it may happen, if it does happen, it's become a thing now in the industry where if Adam Schefter puts it out there first, because kind of backtracking here, but Twitter has now become a place where breaking news has to happen. Like Adam Schefter isn't going to file a story to ESPN.com to break news. He's breaking it on Twitter and then following it up with a story on ESPN.com. So if Adam Schefter puts it out there first and 3 minutes later, Jay Glazer says, I'm hearing that Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is demanding a trade. He has to now source Adam Schefter because it's the journalism part of it is wrong. They all know who they all follow each other. They know what the other person is reporting. And so for me, I don't have that issue because there's no other website that's reporting breaking spoilers in this show. So I'm never in a hurry to get to beat someone to the punch when it comes to that, because like I said, I have no competition out there when it comes to putting a spoiler out on Twitter or something like that. But it definitely is kind of the same deal where you still want it to people to know like, hey, I broke this. But when I've been doing it for 10 years, And there hasn't been one other place on the internet that's done it at all. It's like, okay, I think people know now this guy spoils the show. If you follow him on Twitter or on Instagram, you're going to get spoilers. And I just kind of looked at it that way. I've never had to deal with the competition that the Schefters and all those people have to deal with.
And trust me, I don't want that job. Like I said on your podcast, it's like the guy who runs in the marathon 10 feet behind the lead. It's like you get all the mud and everything thrown in your face. You do have to deal. I mean, so there's nothing legally wrong. Like, you're not under any contracts, obviously, like the Bachelor contestants are. But I read this, and let me know if it's true. Did Bachelor sue you in the past?
Twice. Yeah.
And
this was back in 2011. It was on Ben Flanick's season.
Did they have any legal standing for that? Or was it just intimidation?
I think it was definitely intimidation. And I think the other thing was they had a little bit of legal standing because what they sued me for was tortious interference, which is an outside party interfering in a contract between two people, which in this case was the show and its contestants. And they had emails of me reaching out directly to contestants asking for information of what happened on their season. The thing was, those contestants never ended up telling me anything. It was just, he tried to interfere in the contract. So now we've got it. We've got written emails from him saying, hey, I'll pay you if you tell me this. But they never did. So when I went to my lawyer with it, he's like, look, to prove tortious interference in a court of law, you have to prove 5 different things. He goes, they're not going to be able to prove I don't even think they'll be able to prove one other than you tried, but you weren't successful. That you damaged their show, which they'd never be able to prove damages. And there's other things under tortious interference. You can Google it. But so we just kind of went. So at that point, we went back and forth of a settlement agreement. They would send over a settlement to my lawyer. We didn't like the language in it of what I could and couldn't do. We sent one back, and it was just back and forth for literally 7 months. And then they finally sent back a settlement agreement that I felt was fair. And I agreed with, and we signed it. And that was the last of that. And then the very next summer, apparently I broke it, which I was like, the wording in the contract was based on what I did at the time. They could see where I breached the agreement. And so what they told me was, all right, look, we feel that you're in breach of the agreement that we signed last summer. Here's what we want you to do. Pay us a fine and take down the spoilers you have already posted. And this was for Bachelor in Paradise, or this was for Bachelor Pad season 2, I believe. But the thing was, the spoilers had been out there for a month. So I was like, I have no problem taking them down. Everybody knows what they are anyway. And then I paid the fine. And then we redid the wording in the agreement. So it's like, there's no loopholes. There's nothing that can be misconstrued. It's like, this is what we will, you can do versus what you can't do. And then ever since then, there's never been an issue. So 2012 was the last time I had an issue with that.
Do you think they realized the value of, for some of the audience to know the spoilers? Do you think they realized, like, all right, this is reality Steve's sort of a necessary itch on our back?
Oh, 100%. They know what I do only benefits them. I'm sure they don't like the fact that I do what I do, but they also in turn realizes it only draws attention to their show. And because publicly they don't acknowledge me, they'll never talk about me publicly. However, privately, I've had contestants tell me that, you know, in their conversations with producers, they're like, yeah, you know, he's a necessary evil of the show. Like, we get he does it. We wish he wouldn't, but it's whatever. We know it's not that big of a deal. So that's why I don't think they truly care what I do. I think the biggest thing they care about is spoiling the ending. I don't think they care that I spoil who got the one-on-one date in episode 6. I don't think they care about that. It's the ending, which, and I think, and there's an interview that Chris Harrison did with a local Dallas radio station probably 3 or 4 years ago, where he specifically mentioned the ending part about, like, yeah, I wish the ending would get out. A lot of hardworking people on this show to have it go to waste when some guy just decides to tell everybody the ending. I'm like, okay, Chris, but your show's filmed in advance. Like, anything that's filmed in advance has the ability to get out to the public. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just happen to be that guy that does it, you know?
Now, so the last question I have regarding spoilers and sources is, and again, I'm coming at this with so much empathy. Like someone who gets their hand blown off from a firework, they're not trying to do that. Your biggest, at least from what I could see, spoiler gone wrong was Jenna, where there was misinformation given to you, doctored text messages saying she was having an affair when she really wasn't, and it ended her relationship, maybe for the better, because she's, I believe, remarried or reengaged. Now, run me through that whole process of how, like the fallout from that.
Yeah, that was bad. It's easily, and I've said this ever since, and it's by far the biggest mistake I've ever made and the biggest regret I have in doing what I've done over the years. Someone that was real, and the thing was, finding out about it later, it wasn't somebody that was just trying to send me false info, or, well, clearly they were sending me false info, but it wasn't someone that was like out to get Jenna. It was, because Jenna and I have kind of collaborated on this, it was somebody that was obsessed with Jordan. And I mean, I could go into the weeds on something like this, but you will never believe the depths that at least one of the people that was doing this was stooping to get me to post this, by creating fake text messages, fake phone calls, getting a voice on the phone to tell me certain things. And at the time, I was just like, wow, this has to be legit. Like, you just don't think in your mind that somebody is going to that length to put one over on you.
Yeah, you're naive. Naive, of course. It's like, why, you know, and then in hindsight, they show that maybe the text messages were the wrong color. And it looks so obvious when you get a PowerPoint presentation saying this is where it's wrong. But I can only understand in the moment, you're like, yeah, that's it. I got the receipts. This is it.
Yeah, here's the receipts. And I was telling people, I spoke to a guy on the phone. And I did, but that guy is not obviously was not a guy that was involved with Jenna. It was somebody who asked a friend. I don't know who the guy was that I spoke to on the phone to this day, but I didn't know this until, I think a year and a half later is when Jenna came to me. Yeah. Cause this happened in the summer of September of whatever year that was. And then she came to me during right before the pandemic in 2020. So yeah, summer of 2018 is when that season aired. She came to me before the pandemic last year and said, Steve, I've been gathering evidence. I've literally been on this for a year and a half because obviously this is my life. And I know maybe you don't want to listen to me, but will you hear me out? And I did. And everything that she showed me was, I was like, wow, I majorly fucked up. Like there's no other way to describe this. I absolutely blew it on this one. So I did I did everything I could at that point. I took everything down that I had ever written about that. I took every tweet down that I had ever written about that. And I had Jenna on my podcast where I publicly apologized to her. And we walked through that whole process of her gathering the information over a year and a half. We never gave out names of the people that we believe it to be, who was behind it. Only thing we said was, they're definitely people that were very strong fans of Jordan. And Jordan was somebody that they were obsessed with, and they didn't want Jordan to be with anybody. So they were going to make his new fiance look as bad as they could.
And she was saying Jenna was hiring a technology specialist, and everyone's like, yeah, right. It just goes to show as an audience that we're all kind of like, come on, you know what I mean? And then it's like, all right, well, where are we all now when it turns out she was just literally speaking her truth, which is the.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you know, there's only so much I can do. And I feel like with Jenna, I've done, you know, and Jenna doesn't hold any, I mean, I'm sure Jenna wishes I never reported that about her, but you know, she now has a baby, she's engaged, she's moved on with her life and she's done well for herself. Her and I have kept in touch. She doesn't hold any ill will towards me. And she did for a while, but once she finally spoke to me and we talked things out, I think she realized like I didn't have any malicious intent, but what I was reporting surely ended up being, malicious and just factually incorrect things about her. So I'll always feel bad about that. And there's nothing I can do. I can't take back what I did. All I can do is delete it all and admit that I was wrong. And like I said, put her on the podcast for 90 minutes and we talked it all through and told everybody, you know, here's the deal. The only thing we didn't do was out the people who we thought, who we think are behind it, but it was multiple people creating multiple accounts. Like they really went the extra mile. And that's just never happened to me before when given information about either a contestant or a spoiler. Nobody goes to that length to try and fool somebody. You know?
Well, here's the deal. When you do sell your life story, you have to keep equity in it because this is fascinating stuff. You make sure you got a lot of back end money here because this is like, it's fascinating. And like you said, you didn't have any ill will, but there was obviously like collateral damage. So was that scenario one of the main reasons you decided to like lay off reporting on things that aren't necessarily pertinent to the show itself?
Well, at that point, that was 2018. And ever since then, what I did was I tightened from that point forward is where I tightened up my vetting process, because I think if I would have dug harder, I know we say that they went through great lengths, but if that were to happen to me now, there's no way I would have been fooled by that. It was such a hot story. Like, she literally just got engaged to this guy and she's got a sugar daddy and doesn't even care about him. It was such a hot story that I let the idea of capitalizing on a hot story interfere with getting it right.
This happens literally every day with reporters in today's world of like quick fire reporting, where there are people that, you know, a lot of these reporters are older or whatever, they don't understand social media, and there'll be plenty of trolls online that'll send out something fake. And next thing you know, it's reported and then it's like, haha, shame on you. But that's the misinformation that exists. It's literally people, you know, if they're obsessed with Jordan or just like to be a shit stirrer, will do that. And it's kind of like you're naive until you're not. I got scammed in Barcelona when I was 21. It's the most embarrassing story of my life. And it took me years to even think about it because I was so ashamed that I didn't, that I like let that happen. You know, it's like, I'm smarter than that. And, you know, and with you, you're probably smarter than that now, but they got you, you know, you've done what you can.
And I guarantee I feel the same way about that story that you felt about Barcelona. Like I look back on that Jenna story and the fact that I got to know Jenna and, you know, been able to talk to her and we've been very civil with each other since then. And knowing her as a person, it breaks my heart that I did that to her in 2018. It just sucks. And I hate it. I hate that I fell for that. And so from that point forward, I was just like, all right, anything that comes out, especially if it's contestant related, and especially if it's something as scandalous like this, where what I'm going to report is going to truly damage somebody's reputation, I had to be a little bit, I have to vet stuff out a lot more. Now, there was a story post Jenna that I did that put somebody in this franchise in a very bad light, but everything was vetted out correctly. And while I reported it and it is true, I do understand the damage now that person has had to endure. The problem is the information that I put it out there was vetted and it is correct. So now it just turns into, you know what? I think even if I know something to be true, I just got to lay it off. If it's going to completely damage somebody's reputation, because obviously I have a large following and people will believe things that I report because a lot of the stuff I've reported has been true. I just realized I got to lay off it and just be like, let's stick to show stuff unless it becomes a show storyline. And I know something that can add to the story that the television show is presenting to us. I just got to lay off it.
Well, you know, this is good because this is like failing upwards. Like we're going from legal issues with ABC or Bachelor. Okay, we know it's legal, what's not legal. Now it's going into, you know, your moral compass going, all right, while I could do this, I have every right to under my amendment, my First Amendment rights and this and that. You know, I won't get canceled, but okay, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, you know, and all that. So that's good. And I wanted to bring this up. Shame, I just looked it up, you know, for a simple definition, is the feeling of humiliation caused by foolish behavior. So I know we talked about this on your podcast, so I don't want to spend too much time with it, but the phone call to Demi Burnett about a sex dream that you had, Did you feel shame after she outed you with that?
I felt ashamed. Yeah, I mean, I felt shame. I felt embarrassed. I felt just, it was, the thing was, when she posted it, I was doing a live at the time. So it took me a while to process it. I had to get off the Instagram live that I was doing at the time, because all these people in the Instagram lives were commenting, "Hey, Demi's saying this about you right now." I'm like, huh? So, but yeah, I felt embarrassed because I realized at the time when she posted that, and, you know, again, I have to word this very carefully because it turns into you're making excuses. But at the time that she posted that, I had no idea that's how she felt about that phone call that had happened 8 months previous. Again, the detractors will come to me and say, how did you not know that that was wrong? And we can go sit and debate back and forth all day long. The bottom line is, I don't try and make women feel uncomfortable. That's not what I enjoy doing. So it wasn't something that I thought made her feel that way, but now I realize it did. And so it'll never happen again. And it's simple as that. Outside of somebody that I'm actually intimately involved with, I'm sure they wouldn't, you know, it's obviously a lot, you know, talking to your partner, significant other about, you know, a sex dream that you may have had about them. Yeah, sure. It's a little more acceptable. Demi and I had no sort of, I'd never met her. We'd only spoken a few times. We had gotten civil on text messages about a month earlier, but nothing that warranted me going and making that phone call and just telling her I did. And again, for people that don't understand, and I know people that really got on you for defending me when I went on Wit and Rye's YouTube show, just know that this isn't a behavior that I do with every woman, which is what the story then turned into, was like he acts this way with every woman. And this wasn't I was hitting on Demi and telling her the graphic details of a sex dream. It was me telling her, because a month earlier she had said on her podcast to my girlfriend at the time, who was her podcast guest, "Your boyfriend hates me." And we had gotten to a point over the month from the time she said that to where Demi and I were civil with each other. And this is kind of an ironic, funny moment that I had a sex dream about someone who a month ago thought I hated her. And I felt the need to tell her that, which was dumb in hindsight. But at the time I told her, I wasn't thinking, and it was stupid. And I own it. I never should have told her that. And I should have realized I crossed a boundary when I did that. But I just want people to know this wasn't a, "Hey, Demi, this is what happened in the dream. And we did this and I did this to you." It wasn't anything like that. And it wasn't like I was, you know, pleasuring myself while on this phone call, which I think it came across to people, because that's the narrative from the haters that have contacted me and the trolls that have left the messages to me about what they think, you know, calling me a sexual predator, calling me a future rapist. The only way you're getting from Steve made a phone sex call to Demi to now calling me a future rapist is because you think that I was preying on her and it happened numerous times and I was on the phone. Like, that's the only way I can think somebody would make that jump from call to you're going to be a future rapist, you know?
And look, we talked about this more extensively on your podcast. So I will tell people to go listen to that, where we talk more about positions of power, whether you know it at the time or found out afterwards, you know, all of that. So people can go listen to that more in depth. But I did want to ask you, because look, we've all got best friends or brothers or uncles or sons or people that like will do something that they learn like that is not the right thing to do. Talking about it in hindsight isn't making excuses. It's not justifying it like it was the right thing. We're just talking about it, and someone will listen to that and maybe get the wrong idea, like they're being defensive. But I think most people on my channel at least understand, all right, we're just trying to like work our way out of this kind of trap that you were in. Not a trap in the sense that anyone put you there. It was your own mistake, but like you're talking about it. Now, my question is this. A lot of people, you know, they hide behind their PR statement, one quick Instagram apology, and then they're done. Being your own boss, your own CEO and all this, do you think if you worked for a company like E! News, do you think you would have been fired? Would you have been a victim of cancel culture?
Sure. Yeah. I think so. I actually think so more. I think because the Demi stuff happened one day after my old blog posts were being reported by a podcast out there, which were very misogynistic in writing. And, you know, from back in the 2011 to 2016 range, where my writings were being put out there as very misogynistic, very anti, not anti-women, because I had women friends and I like women, but it was just the stuff that we talked about, that the culture was to objectify women in the media and sexually objectify women in the media. So that had come out the day before. So I guess my thing was, if I were writing for whoever, Bleacher Report, and I never told Bleacher Report when they hired me, hey, I have some old writings out there on my website that somebody may have taken screenshots of, just know I used to write this. If I never told them that, and then that came out the way it did in, back in April, I absolutely think I would have been fired. Just the way I see things are going in the media, people are getting fired for one tweet. I had years of misogynistic writings on blog posts now, that,
yeah,
you know, so the Demi thing isolated, I think it's tough to say. Probably, yeah, I think so.
So with,
I think I've already would have been fired from the writings before it. Like, I think it would have just been, it doesn't matter. You're
now,
already fired.
Now with cancel culture, I do believe in some ways that shame is a operational tool. I shame myself when I'm getting ready to go on vacation. I'm like, what are we doing, Dave? Come on, you know. I just believe with social media, the wrecking ball almost always swings too far. So my question for you is not necessarily regards to this scenario, but in general, what's the way out of over canceling somebody? Because I actually think this conversation and the other one we had is way better of an outcome than if they just silenced you forever.
Yeah. And that's the thing, because it's tough to say, because we're talking about a hypothetical of, if I worked for a company, would I no longer be working for them? The answer would probably have been yes. So then it becomes, should I have been fired for something like that? Clearly, as you know, I would want to be employed. So my thinking would be, can I get a month suspension, you know, without pay or something? Do I need to ever, you know, is nobody ever going to hire me again in the industry because of writings from 8, 9, 10 years ago? You know, I don't know. But the thing was, and the thing that people came to me and said, and I know a lot of other people had a field day with it, was I did a live after all this broke and talked about the fact that somebody asked me if I thought I'd be canceled. And I said, I don't think so, just because, but I was speaking at it from a business perspective of being my own boss. Like, I don't work for anybody. So what is the, when you're talking about reality Steve being canceled, I guess I didn't even know what that meant. To me, I was just looking at it as business-wise, and business-wise, realitysteve.com was still going to be around. My podcast wasn't going anywhere. So in that sense, no, I didn't think I was being canceled, but what I was going to do was, now after being called out for that behavior, I was now going to change that and not report the things the way that I did, take it off my site, take all the old writings off my site. Everything from 2016 and previous has been removed from my website. So I'm just at a point where I just needed to be better and get better and learn from what happened. And, you know, like I said, the misogynistic writings had stopped years ago. I don't know why somebody screenshot them and sent them to a podcast in Bachelor Nation. Clearly somebody was out to get somebody canceled. But in my situation where I work for myself, I wasn't going to shut down my own site when I still had spoilers to give on Katie's season and Bachelor in Paradise, which I followed up on. So I guess this just becomes almost a case-by-case basis. It's like every individual person can now make their own determination. Do you want to listen to anything Reality Steve says? And in my thought process was, I don't think my misogynistic writings 10 years ago have anything to do with telling you who Katie wins. If I know who Katie picks at the end of the season and I report it, you're probably going to listen to it. You're not going to be like, oh, well, he was a misogynist 10 years ago. I don't want to listen to what he has to say. They're apples and oranges. It's not the same thing to me.
Yeah, my view with cancel culture, because it is like a sort of a targeted term, that it's like the woke police, cancel culture. It's like people want to like, no, what do you think about, you know? And then the thought becomes, well, it's not cancel culture, it's holding people accountable. Well, for me, I think there needs to be like a sort of set like checklist. All right, did the person apologize? Yes. Did they vow to do better? Yes. Are they doing better? Yes. Do they keep making the same problems even though they know it's wrong? Then you pull something away. But and again, I just feel like there needs to be like a parent wouldn't cancel their kid. They would say, they would slap him on the wrist and say, next time you're getting a timeout. And then after that, you get your weekend iPad taken away. There needs to be a way to get out of this. And I don't think we're there yet, but I do think we're getting there where people are going, whoa, whoa, whoa. There's a lot of pushback towards a lot that's going on. And it doesn't mean everybody's innocent. It just means, was the cancellation worth the crime?
Yeah. And it's tough to say, because I think in everybody's mind, it's going to be different. Everyone's going to look at it differently. If they already don't like you, which a lot of people in Bachelor Nation just are not fans of Reality Steve because of the things that I've reported over the years, they already have a negative opinion of me. So they would like to see me canceled. The podcast that talked about everything that happened, none of them were sympathetic towards me whatsoever. They wanted me glad that it happened to me. They were relishing in the fact that I was taking a lot of heat for this, which is like, okay, that's fine, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm still going to give you spoilers and people are still going to come to my site. And I haven't seen any change in my traffic since this all started, you know, since this happened. And Katie's season has started, there hasn't been any change. So, you know, and maybe that upsets some people. I don't know. It's like, what at this point, and it's interesting because you just read off that checklist and I was listening intentively because I know that I've checked off those first three things that you read. I owned it. I apologized for it. I'm not continuing to do that behavior and I've changed. So that's all I can do going forward. And if people don't want to accept that, and they just want to stick with the narrative of, oh, Reality Steve's a bad guy, there's nothing I'm going to say or do that's going to change that. But I know that I've changed. And I know that after this happened in April, I've taken the steps to be better. And I've shown it in my writing. I've shown it in my podcast. I've shown it talking to you about it and being open and honest about what happened. So I'm in a better place now because I feel like I've talked about it and been a little more open about it and realize that, okay, I did something wrong. I was called out for it. So how do I get past it? Apologize for it. Don't do it again and change going forward. And I feel like I've done all three.
Now, my last question with all of that, which we spoke about a little bit on your podcast, is that the main criticism of you with your apology, because, you know, a lot of times when the mob is out for someone, they want an apology, but then they start dissecting, like, did Chris Harrison really mean it? He came off this way, he came off that way. With you, the general consensus of the people that don't really necessarily accept your apology is your defensiveness. So I know we mentioned that we talked about this on your podcast, but what is that? What is the feeling of, do you feel like you've got a good heart? So are you defensive because, or is that just your natural vibe?
Yeah. I think that's what it ended up being, was because I knew more in depth about that phone call, about what didn't happen on that phone call, that it wasn't an intent to, you know, seduce a woman. I was like, it was a phone call that shouldn't have been made, but let's not turn it into something that it wasn't. And that turned into me being very defensive about it. And then the second I start explaining that phone call, it turns into making excuses. And I've never made an excuse for that phone call. I've said since the day Demi called me out on it, I never should have made that phone call. I never should have told her that. That wasn't appropriate. But when I started seeing the response to it of, this is how he acts with all women, this is how he speaks with every woman, it's like, where are you coming up with it? How do you even know who I speak to? Like, that's not the case. I'm not a sexual predator. I'm not a future rapist. Like, it got to a point where you're getting called every name in the book and you're like, where is this coming from? So when you get called something like that, you want to defend yourself. But when you defend yourself, immediately you become defensive. So I don't know. Do you just say nothing? Because if you say nothing, then people just assume that you're accepting what is being said about you. And I just wasn't going to accept being called a sexual predator and a future rapist.
I think it's good to talk as much as you need to get out of the misinformation while also owning up to what was wrong. So obviously you've owned up to what you did that was wrong, and I'm not here to prosecute you. Let me wrap this up. But people become defensive because someone catches them doing something wrong. So we talked about the wrongdoing already. Now the problem becomes Chatty Broads calls you out. And then they have to reckon with their own issues of, a different appropriation and you know their own past, which I'm not casting any sort of judgment on them. I'm not a mom. I don't know anything about what it's like to be a mom to over when you go too far oversharing. But if anything, they should have empathy now at least for you and the fact that they were kind of called out for their own oversharing. And I'm not here, you know, they have a very loyal following and I got a lot of shit for even the last video I made about them. I've got no beef at all with them, but I think what we do realize when we're trying to cancel each other or call each other out is that we resort ourselves to just a bunch of rubble because we're all trying the best. We've all got something we did wrong with decent intentions. So it just kind of like, it's like the gladiator. Like, are you not entertained? Is this what we really wanted? And I think, like, I can understand the idea that you would feel like you apologized, but also feel like they were dancing on your grave. Because there was an effort to have you completely removed from Bachelor. Absolutely. And that's like, I guess the question that, you know, I think you've mentioned this before is like, a lot of people will do the same tactics. They'll run with a story. They'll run with misinformation. It's like, that's what I was guilty for. And I guess the only thing is that you have been the biggest spoiler platform that you're the easiest to acknowledge when you've made a mistake, you know?
Yeah. And I've never, like, there's a narrative out there that I never admit when I'm wrong. I'm like, where are these people getting this from? Because I've always admitted when I was wrong, when I've been wrong on a spoiler, I've always admitted I was wrong. And, you know, I was wrong in this situation. I was wrong to be writing the way I was back then. And all I can do is not write that way and take it off my site. You know, the chatty broads thing I thought was really interesting only because, I mean, look, I understand that these people, a lot of these Bachelor themed podcasts can't have me on because of the stigma attached to me, or they don't want to piss off the show. But when Chatty Broads has the opportunity to have me on and just doesn't care to get my side of the story, and then, you know, dances on my grave, it's like, okay, I mean, you have every right to do whatever you want to do. Like, that's what you want to do. That's the way you want to present yourself. That's fine. But I also noticed that when they did that and they reported that story, all of my longtime fans were like, Steve, you've addressed this numerous times in the past. Like, you've talked about how your writing was so bad on women in the past. It's like they thought they stumbled upon a gold mine. But because Chatty Broads does not listen to my podcast and does not read what I write, other than they know the spoilers probably that I produce, they had no idea that I'd addressed those writings numerous times. And I was just kind of surprised they went about it the way they did. But everybody's entitled to do whatever they want to do.
Now I'm not, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not, I don't like the whole an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. Like, I don't like that sort of justice, but do you feel like karmatically speaking, we're back to like a net zero? Are we back to a net zero here?
Yeah, I certainly think so. After the things that I saw, pop up online last week, I don't think it's getting nearly as, it's definitely not getting attention on, you know, 'cause there was, you know, E! Online did run with my story. They were the only ones. Us didn't do it. People didn't do it. None of the other, I don't think any of the other tabloids did. Maybe Life and Style did, but nobody has run with what popped up last week, at least that I've seen on the Chatty Broads. So it's probably on a subculture that is more aware of it than the national audience. But I would say it's like, look, you know, we're even. Like, maybe you should be a little more careful about how you come after people when what's the saying about those stones and glass houses, yeah, and whatever, basically what applies here.
Well, there you go. Now my last thought here, do you know what your love language is?
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of the Enneagram or whatever.
It's close. So it's what brings you love. Do you feel love by giving gifts or acts of service, quality time, affirmations? Yeah. What's the thing that fills up Steve's love well? We all want to know.
I took it. I took that test when I was with my girlfriend last summer. I was quality time.
Quality Time, interesting.
That was, and it wasn't, Quality Time wasn't like skyrocket ahead of second place. It was fairly close. But Quality Time was one, and what are the other four again? I know Words of Affirmation is one.
Acts of Service, if someone does a deed for you, or gifts.
Gifts. I think Words of Affirmation was second. I know Quality Time was number one.
Affirmations is big amongst men, I believe. We need to be patted on our back and told we're doing a good job. Which I ask that because when the defensiveness that happens is like, I think I'm doing good. I've changed. I've made moves. And then when something we mentioned this on your podcast, every time I've ever snapped at my fiance, it's because she's like, why didn't you do this? And I'm like, I was out cleaning the thing, you know? And like I'll be like, I just get into this rage because I know I'm trying my best. And it's so deep rooted, and it's like, you know, were you hugged enough? Or were you hugged too much as a kid? That's what it all comes down to, I feel like. I want to end with just this, and I really appreciate you staying a little longer. Greg Grippo, and I'll mention that this will be a spoiler beforehand. Was it you who said that you don't think this ends well? I know a few people have mentioned this.
Katie has come out and said, like, this is not a traditional ending. And it's a mess. And I've heard the same things, but I keep hearing like it's a mess, but I haven't heard any details of what the mess is. So I don't necessarily know what happens. I just know how we get to the end point of Katie and Blake. But there is a lot of apparently craziness that happens this season. I just haven't heard yet what it is. In terms of Greg, overwhelming sentiment online seems to be that he eliminates himself towards the end. I haven't heard that, but I haven't heard that he didn't either. I haven't heard anything about what happens to Greg this season, other than I know she's with Blake, so Greg didn't win. That's the extent of what I know about Greg. So in terms of what happens on the show. Now, off the show stuff, have I been sent things about him? Absolutely. Have I been sent things about other guys this season? Absolutely. And I've chosen to not talk about it this year because, again, I'm in a lose-lose now after what happened. So there's no point. And, we'll see what happens. But in terms of Greg on the show, I don't know what happens to him other than he doesn't win.
Well, that's good to know. That's exciting. Yeah. It's almost like I'm the same way where I know it's going to end with her very upset with him. And I don't know why or how, but we'll have to see that when we get there.
And she, you know, she's the one that's kind of fed into this because she went on Nick's podcast and specifically said this season is not a traditional ending and there is a villain worse than Thomas. And people have asked me, well, who is it? And somebody in my reader emails today said, I don't think it's Hunter. And I said, no, I don't think it's Hunter either. Hunter's just getting one of those edits of the guy that's just, hey, I don't care about the other guys. I'm here for her. But I'm assuming, because of the pedestal that Greg Grippo is on with the public that just watches the show for 2 hours on Monday nights and doesn't pay attention to anything else that's happening, he's the front runner. And maybe some people think that Blake is now after Monday. But so for her to say that there's a villain worse than there's a villain that turns out to be worse than Thomas, that came out of her mouth, not mine. So people are just asking me, well, who do I think it is? And I think it's Greg.
Yeah.
But I have no, I don't know if it is or not. And if it's not, we'll find out. But I'm just doing that based on where his standing is in the show right now. It just wouldn't make sense if Justin ends up being the guy that is I don't think Justin could do anything that would make him look worse than Thomas at this point, you know, just because we haven't been invested in Justin at all. We're invested in Greg. I guess Michael A would be the only other one because everyone is invested in him, but I don't see anything that he does at the end because I know that he eliminates himself because of his child. So that wouldn't make Katie say he's worse than Thomas. So I almost use process elimination of, you know, it's not the guys that go home in the next few episodes, the Treys, the Connor B's, I don't think it's any of them. It's like, it's gotta be somebody that lasts a long time for her to say that about. And so my guess is it's Greg, and I've kind of heard it's Greg, but I don't know any details.
All right. Well, there we go. We'll have to just find out how we get there. And of course, everyone can go follow you on Instagram. I'm sorry. Is it at Reality Steve on Instagram? I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
And then, it's at Reality Steve everywhere. Instagram, Twitter handle, realitysteve.com is the website. And the Reality Steve podcast every Thursday.
And we did a 90-minute podcast. So if everyone's listening to this and you have any more questions or anything, we went right into the weeds. So you can go check out Reality Steve's podcast there. And dude, I'd love for you to come back anytime you have any info you want to share or anything. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, no problem. I love talking to you, man. This is it's great. I'm glad we've connected in the last couple of weeks, and we'll definitely be, you'll definitely be a guest on in the future on the podcast, and you know, hopefully you have me on again. I'll come on anytime you want.
Thanks. And I did want to mention that I talked to my fiance. I thought it'd be a good idea to donate the monetization of this episode this week to RAIN, which is Katie Thurston's the charity that she supports. So just as like a good faith measure, not to be like profiting, you know, off of these discussions. I think they're good to be had, but just for everyone listening out there, there'll be a link below where people can donate if they want to add to that donation. But thanks again, man, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Dave. Thanks.
All right. Bye, everybody.